a mutual friend, and Brother James Bowling, and just a very brief meeting. But I remember being impressed with that man. I remember thinking, now, you know, I believe that's a good man. And over the years, as I have contacted him and watched him, observed, it has been a very pleasant experience because I've just felt like this is a man of God. I've watched how he treats people. I've watched how he responds in a lot of different situations. I've watched him not be full of himself. I said not be full of himself. I really like that. I appreciate that. In just a moment, Brother Randy's going to come preach. Before he does that, Mark and Rick are going to sing for us. But I want you to pray that God would speak through him, and he can do that and will do that, for he is, I'm convinced, the real deal and a man of God. I want you to hear him. I want to welcome him and also Ms. Bridget Holloway. Welcome to you, both of you. And, Brother, you are at home here. You're among friends. All right? Then, if you will, be seated, please.
Great to be here. I appreciate the invitation, Brother Tom. And two things I'd like to say before I get started. Looking around the audience, I feel like a fly in a bowl of buttermilk. And secondly, quote-unquote black churches, they get out about 1:30 or 2 o'clock. So make yourself real comfortable. We can warm the food up when I finish. But I thank God for the song, He is a Mighty God that we serve. Well, I want to get right into the Word of God. I want you to turn to the book of Malachi. Oh, no, he's going to preach about tithing. Oh, no. Book of Malachi, chapter number 1. There is something in Malachi beside, will a man rob God? Malachi, chapter number 1. Now, Malachi was called as what we would call one of the post-captivity prophets, along with such guys as Zechariah and Haggai. And so Malachi was preaching to Jerusalem, or to the people of Jerusalem, after they had gotten back from Babylonian captivity. Remember, they had been there some 70 years, and Zerubbabel has gone back to rebuild the temple. And then he's followed by Ezra, who restores the spiritual vitality to the people. And then Nehemiah comes along and he rebuilds the wall so that Jerusalem will have the protection that it needs. And so the priests, who are the ones that are basically in question this morning, they have been reassigned the responsibility of making sure the worship there at the temple is carried out. This is the second temple, by the way. Remember, they had to rebuild it after it was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. But in Malachi chapter number 1, Malachi has a message for the priests. And so I understand that this passage of Scripture, this portion of Scripture, is primarily directed to the priests. But I think by extension, it also applies to the people. And I think by principle, it applies to believers today. And so I want to begin starting with verse number 6 as we see the message that Malachi has for the people. Now, Brother Tom, he informed me that I didn't have to preach a message as it relates to it being a homecoming, but I believe in the providence of God that I do believe that there are some things here that are applicable, especially to churches that have been in existence, such as you all have, for such a number of years. And so in Malachi chapter 1, we began with verse number 6, as really God, through the prophet Malachi, begins by rebuking the people. And the first thing I want you to notice, for those of you that maybe believe in alliteration, I want you to see, first of all, the irreverence of the people. Starting with verse 6, it says, "A son honoreth his father, and a servant his master. If I then be a father, where is mine honor? And if I be a master, where is my fear, saith the Lord of hosts, unto you, O priests, that would despise, or that despise my name?" In other words, he said, now, I think it's pretty much understood that it's proper for a son to give respect to his father, or for children to give proper respect and diligence to their parents. And one of the sad things about our nation today is that there seems to be a declining of respect for those that are elders and those that are in authority. There was a time where it was yes, sir, and no, sir, and yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, and now it's just yes and no. But under normal circumstances, it is quite appropriate for a son to honor his father. And so God says, likewise, then, if I be a father, where's mine honor? And I'd like to say to Crooked Creek Baptist Church this morning, if we say that we are children of God, and if we say we are saved by the grace of God, then I'm asking us and I'm asking myself, are we giving our Lord his proper respect and honor? It's not a great thing to do when someone it should receive honor and they don't receive it. And so Malachi, he, first of all, and of all people, think about this, of all people, for him to have to tell the priests this, it lets you know the sad state of affairs that were going on in Jerusalem at the time. And he says, "O priest that despise my name." What an ironic thing to say, that the priests were despising his name or being irreverent to their father and irreverent to the things of God. Remember, it was the priest's responsibility to be responsible for all of the sacrifices involving temple worship. In particular, remember the sons of Aaron. They were the ones that, in particular, were assigned to the priesthood. Of course, they were helped by the Levites, but they all came from the tribe of Levi. And so for them to despise or to be irreverent to the things of God, one of the reasons our churches in America are in trouble is because we have too many men of God who don't respect the things of God. And so there's an irreverence that we see that the priests or having to be confronted with. And then he says, and you say, wherein have ye despised my name? It's almost like they were oblivious to everything that the prophet was charging them with. And then in verse number 7, and then I think it's revealed even more fully there, verse 7, not only do you see the irreverence, but you see the ignorance. In other words, their attitude is, what are you talking about? Notice in verse 7 it says, ye offer polluted bread upon mine altar. And ye say, wherein have we polluted thee? In that ye say, the table of the Lord is contemptible. In other words, when they were confronted with the fact that they were offering polluted bread, now, and I'm not going to get into all the details of this. I believe it has direct reference to the showbread that was supposed to be given to the priests in their responsibility in carrying out the activities of the temple. But the priests were offering polluted bread, bread that wasn't fresh. If if you read the Bible, you'll see that that bread was supposed to be done on a weekly basis. And so for them to offer bread that was stale or polluted or that wasn't fresh, it showed that there was a contempt. Or there was a not necessarily a hatred, but a total disrespect for the things of God. And you say, oh, I can't believe that those priests would have that type of attitude. Well, before you blame the priest, let's progress a little further. Now, we see that they declared themselves ignorant of what the prophet was accusing them of. They said, wherein have we done this? Wherein have we despised thy name? Wherein have we polluted thee? It's one thing to do wrong. It's another thing to plead ignorance of your wrongdoing. And so they acted as if they were surprised that the prophet would have the gumption to even say something like this, that they were treating the house of God with contempt and disrespect. But that's what they did. So there was not only an irreverence, but there was an outright ignorance, or at least a proclaiming of ignorance as it relates to what are we doing wrong. And then God begins to give the indictment. If you look at verse number 8, it says, and if you offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? And if you offer the lame and the sick, is it not evil? Offer it now to thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee or accept thy persons, saith the Lord of hosts? Now, in order to fully appreciate this, I want you to hold your place there. But let me show you how the sacrifices were supposed to be. If you look at Leviticus chapter number 22, you see the criteria that was given as it relates to how the sacrifices were supposed to be that were offered to God on the altar. In Leviticus chapter number 22, and I want to start with verse number 17. I realize this is somewhat lengthy, but I think you really need to see how far the people had strayed away from what the Lord had prescribed for them to do originally. In verse number 17 of Leviticus 22, it says, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto Aaron. Remember, Aaron was the one that was in charge of the sacrifice. He was the priest. And to his sons and to all the children of Israel. And I want to make note of that, to all the children of Israel. The message was in particular to the priest, but it was to all the children of Israel. Almost as what I'm saying this morning, the message may be directed toward the priest, but all of the people bore the responsibility. Now notice what it goes on to say. He says, whatsoever he be of the house of Israel or of the strangers in Israel that will offer his oblation or his offering for all his vows and for all his freewill offerings, which they will offer unto the Lord for a burnt offering. So he gives them what type of offerings they were supposed to give. In verse 19, now notice this. Ye shall offer at your own will a male without blemish, or of the bees, or the cattle, of the sheep, or of the goats. But whatsoever hath a blemish, that shall ye not offer. For it shall be acceptable for you. And whosoever offereth a sacrifice of peace offerings unto the Lord to accomplish his vow, or a freewill offering in the bees or sheep, it shall be perfect to be accepted. There shall be no blemish therein. Specifically, verse 22, blind, or broken, or maimed, or having a wean, or scurvy, or scab, ye shall not offer these unto the Lord, nor make an of them upon the altar unto the Lord. In other words, he was basically saying, you need to give your very best. And can I say to you, that's really the title of my message this morning, is giving your best to the Master. Oh, we need to ask ourselves, Cricket Creek, are we giving our best to God? He said, now, if these sacrifices have any of these deformities, don't offer them. If they're blind or broken or maimed or any of these things, don't offer them to God. And then he says in verse 23, either a bullock or a lamb that hath anything superfluous or lacking in his parts, that mayest thou offer for a freewill offering, but for a vow it shall not be accepted. Ye shall not offer unto the Lord that which is bruised or crushed or broken or cut, neither shall ye make any offering thereof in your land. Neither from a stranger's hand shall ye offer the bread of your God or of any of these, because their corruption is in them and blemishes be in them, they shall not be accepted for you. Now, I want you to keep that in mind. There were also some characteristics or some things that had to apply to the priests as well, that I won't make note of this morning. But the point being is that when these people came to give their offering and their sacrifices to God, God expected them to give their very best. He didn't want them to give something that nobody else wanted. He didn't want them to give things that were discarded, that had no use, and were not really something that was appropriate to give to God. And I thought about that. He mentioned specifically back to Malachi chapter number 1. The people specifically, he said, they were offering in verse number 8, blind. They were offering lame. They were offering sick. If you look over at verse number 13, you will find that they were also offering sacrifices that were torn. Everything that God told them not to do, that's exactly what they were doing. In other words, they were not giving their very best to God. And I thought about that. What about us? Are we giving our very best to God? Instead of giving God our tithes, we're giving them to the stock market. We're giving them to the craft shows. We're giving them to the flea markets. We're giving them to these fashion gurus. We're spending money, but we're not giving it to God. What about our talents? We're giving our talents to soccer. We're giving our talents to hunting. We're giving our talents to fishing. We're giving our talents to all types of sports. But what about our talents? Are we giving them to God? What about our time? We're giving our time to everything, it seems, but God. We give our time to the golf course. I hope you don't have a tea time today. We give our time, heaven forbid, to the Georgia Bulldogs. And I'm a little hesitant about saying that, being a Gamecock myself. But we give our time to the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll go to between the hedges for 3 hours, and we won't read our Bible for 3 minutes. You tell me, are we giving to God what we ought to give Him? Before we condemn the priests for giving God sacrifices that were blind and maimed and torn, before we're so critical of those priests, we need to ask ourselves a question. Are we giving God our best, or are we guilty of the same thing? You see, when you've been a church for as long as you all have, and I know this church has probably spanned many generations, but after a while, you know, going to church can become routine. After a while, going to church can become somewhat perfunctory. After a while, you know, going to church is almost like we just give God our leftovers. We don't give our best. We give our best to everything else. And then what we might have left, we'll give it to God on Sunday. As a matter of fact, sometimes we don't even give it to Him on Sunday night. Sometimes we don't give it to Him on Wednesday night. We give Him barely enough to say, well, you know, I go to Crooked Creek Baptist Church. I'm a member of Crooked Creek Baptist Church. Blah, blah, blah. I'm not talking about being committed to Crooked Creek Baptist Church. I'm talking about, are you committed to God? Are you giving God your best? Or are you giving Him your leftovers? Well, Malachi, he indicts the priests because they're not giving God their very best sacrifices. They're basically giving God what nobody else wants. And as a result of that, there's an inquiry. In other words, God, He asks some questions. As a result of their irreverence and their proclaiming of ignorance, God then indicts them. He tells them exactly what they are not doing and what they are doing. And then God, He gives an inquiry. He asks some questions. Notice some of the questions that He asks in verse number 8. He says, offer it now unto thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee or accept thy person? Saith the Lord of hosts. He further goes on by saying in verse 9, and now I pray, beseech God that He will be gracious unto us. This hath been by your means. Will He regard your persons? Saith the Lord of hosts. In other words, He asks the people some questions. And I know maybe it's not the best example, but it's almost like Him saying, now, you're bringing me these sacrifices that are deformed. Some of them are blind, some of them are lame, some of them are torn, they're sick. He said, now, if you were giving something to the president or to the governor, would you give it to him? If you knew that you were going to be in the presence of the governor or the president, would you give them what you're giving me? Would you give it to the governor? And it's a rhetorical question. The obvious answer is we would not give somebody that we really respected. We would not give them our leftovers. If you were going to have the governor come visit your home, you'd have the fine china. You'd have the best food. You'd clean the house up. You'd do everything because of who it was. And he's sort of asking them to seriously consider something. Now, you do all of this for a governor or for a man, but look at what you're doing to God. Look at what you're giving Him. He said, will He be pleased with thee? I don't think He would. Would He accept that person? Would it matter to Him who you were if you were not giving Him your very best? I don't think it would. He said, will He regard your persons, saith the Lord of hosts? In other words, He's asking some pointed questions. He's making inquiry. Would you offer this to the governor? Will he be pleased with thee? Will he accept thy person? These are questions that He wanted them to ponder. And these are some questions you and I need to ponder as well. We need to ask ourselves, just what am I doing for God? What am I giving to God? Am I giving Him my best? Or am I just giving Him what I don't want myself? You know, it's almost like the Salvation Army or some of the flea markets or some of the Goodwill places. People will take clothing, they'll take other items, and they'll give it to them. You know why? Because they don't want it anymore. They give what they don't want to somebody else. And that's the same attitude many of us Christians have. We give everybody else our best, but then we give God our leftovers. You don't have any problem watching a football game or, what, heaven forbid, watching a soap opera. You don't have any problem spending 2 hours at the flea market. You don't have any problem being out on the lake for 4 hours. But you get a little cross-eyed when the preacher preaches more than 20 minutes. I'm asking us this morning, are we giving our best to the Master? Well, after He makes inquiry, then God shows His indignation. Look at verses 10 through 12. He says, who is there among you that would shut the doors for naught? And I think He's talking about the priest. And basically He's saying that none of the priests would even close the door of the temple for nothing. In other words, everybody was doing what they were doing for some ulterior motive. Maybe it was money, maybe it was attention, maybe it was fame, but nobody was doing anything out of the goodness of their heart. Everybody expected something for what they were doing. You know, sometimes Christians can get like that. I'm not going to do anything at church. I'm not going to do anything for God unless somebody pats me on the back. Unless somebody rewards me. And unless somebody gives me something for it. What about waiting on God to reward you? He says, neither do you kindle a fire upon mine altar. Remember that when those sacrifices were brought to that brazen altar, remember, they had to be sometimes totally consumed, especially if it was a burnt offering. And so the priests, they didn't even want to light the fire of the altar for nothing. Everybody wanted something. And then God says this. This is part of His indignation. He says, I have no pleasure in you. What about that? Would we really want that to be said about us today by God? Oh, yes, you've been in existence for a long time. You've been coming to this church for 20 years or 10 years or 30 years. But God say, I still have no pleasure in you. You know why I don't have any pleasure in you? Because you're still not giving me your very best. You're still giving me your leftovers. You're still not giving me all that I really desire of you. He says, I have no pleasure in you, said the Lord of hosts. Neither will I accept an offering at your hand. See, God looks at our heart, church. He's not so much concerned with what we do. God looks at our heart. You see, you can do the right thing for the wrong reason. And if you don't realize that God is looking at our heart, He's not like man who looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. And God knows whether every person in here is giving their best to the Master or not. He says, neither will I accept an offering at your hand. And then it goes on to say that God is going to be God regardless of whether you and I give Him the praise that's due His name or not. He says, for from the rising of the sun even unto the going down of the same, my name shall be great among the Gentiles. And in every place incense shall be offered unto my name, and a pure offering. For my name shall be great among the heathen, saith the Lord of hosts. Whether Crooked Creek Baptist Church, or whether I, or whether my wife, or whoever it may be, whether we do what we are supposed to do or not, God is still going to be God, whether you serve Him or not. But I want to get in on it myself. I want to get in on the blessings of God. And I want to give my best to God. I don't want to just give Him my leftovers. But God says, my name is going to be praised, whether you are sincere or not. And then He says in verse 12, He says, but ye have profaned it, in that ye say the table of the Lord is polluted, and the fruit thereof, even His meat, is contemptible. In other words, they were not giving proper reverence and respect to the things of God. They were despising the things of God. And I say to you, church, and I say to myself, my goodness, I've been saved now for some 35 years. And I constantly have to ask myself a question. Are you giving your best to the Master? Maybe you prepared a message last Sunday, but last Sunday can't help me this Sunday. I need fresh oil from God every time I stand for God. You need God's help, and I need God's help every day. We can't rest on our laurels. I don't care how old this church is and how long it's been in existence. God can still write Ichabod over the door of this church if you and I give God our leftovers. If we don't give Him our best. And then He says in verse 13, notice the insincerity of the people. In verse 13 He says, ye said also, behold, what a weariness it is. Can you imagine that? The people were basically, they basically had the attitude, I'm just weary of bringing these sacrifices. I'm weary of doing this and carrying out these routines, these activities. It's almost like young people, do we have to go to church again today? Church is so boring. You ever thought it might be you that's boring? We got to do this again? I'm tired of this. Every Sunday, go to church. Every Sunday night, go to church. Every Wednesday, go to church. I'm so weary of all of this. That's the attitude that the priests had. They said, boy, bringing these sacrifices and doing this on a routine and a regular basis, it just has become weary. But you don't get tired of going to the mall, do you? You don't get tired of shopping, do you? You get weary when it comes to the things of God, but you seem to just pep up when it's time to go to the mall. Boy, you get weary of preaching, but boy, don't let anybody mention hunting or fishing. I'm ready to go. Matter of fact, I want to go to fishing so bad I'll get up 3 o'clock in the morning. But I can't get to church at 10. I'll get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go deer hunting. But I can't make it to morning service at 11 o'clock. I'm so weary of this. I'm so tired of this. This Christian stuff is so boring. That's the attitude that the priests had. They said, behold, what a weariness it is. And ye have snuffed at it. In other words, the people, they turn their nose up at the things of God. And that's what's going on with a lot of people today. That's why our nation is in such a mess. The people have turned their back on God, and God says, okay, if you don't want me, I'm going to show you what's going to happen when you ignore me. I believe God is slowly removing his hand from our nation. You're not safe in the mall. You're not safe at church. You're not safe at the post office. You're not safe at work. You're not safe anywhere. But my Bible tells me safety is of the Lord anyway. He says, behold, what a weariness is. And ye have snuffed at it in the Lord of hosts. And ye have brought that which is, there it is again, ye have brought that which is torn and lame and sick. Now let me ask you a question. Would you want somebody to give you something like that? Would you want them to give you a sacrifice that's torn, that's lame, that's sick, that nobody else wants? Would you want God to give you anything that nobody else wants? Then I think you can begin to see how God felt. It broke the heart of God that the people were giving him their leftovers and keeping their very best for themselves. Notice what he goes on to say. Thus she brought an offering. Should I accept this at this of your hand, saith the Lord? The Lord then he asked the question again. Do you really think that I ought to accept what you're giving me? Well, let me ask you that. Do you really think, and I want you to be honest, and I need to be honest, do you really think that God is pleased with what you're giving him right now? Remember, God only wants our best. He doesn't want our leftovers. And so he says this. He says, but cursed be the deceiver, which hath a flock, a male, and voweth, and sacrifices unto the Lord a corrupt thing. But let me stop right there, because this is my last point. I see a lot of y'all getting nervous anyway. But he's trying to show the people that they were insincere. Their heart really wasn't in it. And so after he says, You're insincere and that you're not giving me your very best, then I believe he really sort of gives an invitation. Because he says, cursed be the deceiver. I need to ask myself, am I trying to deceive the Lord? Am I trying to give the appearance to God that I'm giving him my best when I know in my heart I'm not giving God my best? Am I really trying to deceive God? I believe there are a lot of Christians trying to deceive God today. They're trying to give God the impression that they're giving him their best, when in reality they know that they're not. And he says this. He says, cursed be a deceiver which hath a flock, in his flock a male, and voweth, and sacrifices unto the Lord a corrupt thing. Now, let me translate that. He said, now, woe be to you if you really have an offering, but you're giving God a corrupt one. He said, now it would be a shame. It would be a travesty. It would be a disgrace for you to have something to give to God and then give him something corrupt. That's his invitation. You have an offering, but you won't give it up. You give something that's corrupt to God. And I thought about that in three areas. There's some of you that may be here this morning. You, first of all, need to give yourself to God. In other words, you need to be saved. You might be like I was at one point. I had gone to church until I was 21 years old. But I was still just as lost as the pew I was sitting on. My heart wasn't into the things of God because I was lost. And it may be the reason why you can't give God your very best is, first of all, you've not given Him your heart. And for you, the first order of business this morning is you need to be saved. You need to give your best to God, and for you, your best is yourself. There may be others here this morning. You're saved. But you need to give your lifestyle to God. Theologians call that sanctification. Some people, those that are lost, they need salvation. But for those of us that are saved, but we're still living according to the flesh, we're still carnally minded, we still don't have a real love for the things of God, we need to give our lifestyle to God. We need to live a life that's set apart for God. And then lastly, there may be those that are here this morning, you need to give your service to God. And what I mean by that, you really need to yield to God's call upon your life. I might be talking to someone this morning. God has been nudging your heart about the mission field. God has been nudging your heart about the pastorate. God has been nudging your heart about maybe becoming more involved in the local church as a teacher or in some other capacity. And you've been holding back. But this morning, you need to yield to the call of God. You see, for you, anything else is not your best. For me to do anything other than preach would have been for me not giving my best to God. See, for some of us, when you really give your best, it might mean you're going to spend the rest of your life on a mission field somewhere. For some of you, when you give your best, it might mean that you're going to have to become a better father. You're going to have to become a better mother. For you, it might mean my service to God, I have to fully commit. So I ask you this morning, which one is it for you? Is it salvation? You still cannot truly say there was a day and a time where you gave your life to Jesus Christ. For others, it might be, you know, I got to be honest with you, God. In some ways, I've been deceiving you. I've been deceiving you. I've been deceiving myself. I'm really not giving my best to God. I just need to be honest about it. I've been giving God my leftovers. But this morning, God, with your help, going forward, I'm going to give my best to the Master. And for you, young man, for you, young lady, God has been calling you. This morning, on this anniversary homecoming Sunday, I can't think of a better thing to happen than God call another person out of this local church to serve Him the rest of their lives. Are you giving your best to the master? Or are you giving him your leftovers? What nobody else wants, are you giving your best to the master? This is a question that every one of us needs to ask ourselves this morning. Am I giving my best to the master? If you can't say I am, then it may be this altar is the place you need to be. All heads are bowed and all eyes are closed. Pastor, I'll let you come.